Take your Bible with me this morning and turn to the book of Nehemiah. We'll continue our study there this morning in chapter 2. We have all heard of Murphy's Law. If anything can go wrong, it will. And there's many variations to Murphy's Law. I know in my life, if I'm at a grocery store, at a bank, any place where there's a line, whatever line I get in, the other one is going to move faster. And if I switch lines, the line I just got out of is going to go faster than the one that I get into. I also know something else to be true. All the papers that we save, and maybe you're like me and you have all the papers that you save, those papers are never ever needed until you throw them away. And then they become absolutely essential. I also know to be true, as I work on cars, and I don't do this very often, but as I work on cars, if I drop something, a screwdriver, a bolt, or something, it will come to a rest in the complete dead center underneath the vehicle, never to the right or left or outside the vehicle. I just know these things to be true. Of course, all of these are exaggerations, and they make us chuckle because it really does resemble a life that we live. Things don't always go as planned. Even if we have planned beforehand, it doesn't always go that way, even in following Jesus. Things aren't always going as planned. We're not guaranteed a trouble-free life. Nehemiah chapter 2 gives us some helpful insight into the realities of serving God. Even though Nehemiah was doing God's will, it wasn't always smooth. Studying his life helps us to understand that although life and ministry are not always easy, we should not become cynical and give up. Nehemiah faced some real problems, and he moved through these problems to achieve great accomplishments. In chapter 2 here in Nehemiah shows us four things we need to do, we need to know if we're going to serve God successfully. First, we need to wait on God's time, and we're going to see the importance of waiting on God's time. We need to have the right plan. We need to move forward with the right information, and we need to enlist the right people. And so this morning, we'll start by looking at the first four verses here as we see the importance of waiting on God's time. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1 says, "And it came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad, though you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart.' Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, 'Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire?' Then the king said to me, 'What would you request?' So I prayed to the God of heaven." The month Nisan. This tells us that it had been about 4 months since what we talked about last week when Nehemiah heard about the needs and the situation back in Jerusalem. About 4 months have gone by. And 4 months he waited before he took the opportunity to speak to the king. And so why 4 months? What did he do in these 4 months? During this time, Nehemiah was so burdened by the news that he wept. He was so burdened by what was happening in Jerusalem that he mourned and he fasted and he prayed and he asked God to do something about the situation back in Jerusalem. And Nehemiah, as he prayed and as he fasted and as he wept, he heard God's call. God called him to rebuild Jerusalem's walls, to remove the shame and restore the glory of Jerusalem. And as he hears this, he waited 4 months before he took action, waiting for the right time. 4 months sounds like a long time. But compared to other men of the Bible, 4 months wasn't really all that long. Abraham waited 25 years for God to give him Isaac. Joseph spent time in Potiphar's slave, and then a couple years in prison before he became second in command to Pharaoh. David was told he would be king, and he waited many, many, many years and spent a long time running from Saul before he became king. The Apostle Paul, he had an encounter with Jesus. Had a mission to be the missionary to the Gentiles, and he ministered in obscurity for a while before he became a significant person. And so we see these things, that those who wait on God, serve God, must wait on God. And waiting can be frustrating. Many of us don't like to wait. I've shared many, many times, but I'm not a good waiter. I don't like to wait. I am the guy that when I put something in the microwave that I put in for 30 seconds, and at 28 seconds, I hit stop and get my stuff out because I'm not waiting for the final 2 seconds. I don't wait very well. But waiting doesn't mean in this situation that we do nothing. As Nehemiah waited, he prepared to fulfill God's call. And then when the time came, although the time came, he was with fear. He was prepared to speak to the king because he was ready. He trusted God. He knew that God had given him the calling. He knew that God had laid this burden on his heart. And he knew that God could control the reactions of the king. It seems in this passage that it was against court tradition for an official to be sad in the presence of the king. The official's job was to serve the king, to make the king happy. The king probably didn't want to be reminded that his subjects weren't happy or the things that were going on in their personal lives. He didn't care about those things. They were to do their job and do their job well and leave their problems someplace else. The king's happiness was the most important thing. The people existed, right, to serve the king, not for the king to serve them. But Nehemiah goes before the king and his heart is so burdened that the king notices his sadness. The time had come for Nehemiah to act. The waiting was over. The time had come for Nehemiah to do what he was supposed to do, even though he was very much afraid. He was afraid that going in front of the king, knowing that he was breaking tradition, aware that the king could have him fired or a lot worse, he could have him executed. It didn't take kings a whole lot to execute the people underneath them. And so Nehemiah comes in this situation. But notice in the following verses how Nehemiah responded. Yes, he was afraid. Yes, he had fear. But he didn't let the fear control him. Nehemiah, when the king says, why are you here? What is the situation? He didn't freeze. He didn't panic. He didn't turn around and run away. He didn't apologize. He didn't beg for forgiveness and say, I'm so sorry that I am sad in your presence. He didn't ask for mercy. He was afraid, but he knew that this was the opportunity that he had been waiting for. And it was the opportunity that he had been praying for. And he seized the opportunity. In fact, we see that Nehemiah was very bold. Fear is a natural reaction in some circumstances. But God doesn't want us to allow a spirit of fear to control us. We as believers, we have to learn to move past fear to do what God has called us to do. And we can think of some things that we may be afraid of. Anybody ever start a new job? A little bit of fear going to a new place and starting a new opportunity. Maybe that's why I've been here for 26 years, because I'm afraid to go do something else. And that's probably not true, but a fear. We have things that we're afraid of. Anybody ever have fear of sharing the gospel? You have an opportunity to share your faith with someone and there's that little bit of fear. Maybe that keeps you from sharing. Maybe talking to a loved one about the Lord, about what God is doing, a little bit of fear. How about fear of confronting someone when they're in sin and having to come and share the truth with them? Speaking up against peer pressure. Standing against the evils of our society. There are many things that we may have to do when there's that fear involved. But we realize that we have a burden, that God has burdened us with something. There's a call on our life. And in spite of our fear, we have to be able to take action. We have to be able to do something. There's a time to act. Nehemiah, here, first he responds very politely to the king. He says, "Let the king live forever." He lets the king know that although I am sad in your presence, it doesn't mean that I'm a bad subject. I'm not committing rebellion here, but I have a legitimate concern. And after telling the king very clearly the reasons for his sadness, he poses the king a question. He says, look, this is what's going on in my life. This is why I'm sad. Why should my face not be sad? Why should it not show? He waited. And now the time came to act, but even in his actions, he's seeking God. See, the prayer that we looked at back in chapter 1, it wasn't a one-shot prayer. It wasn't like Nehemiah heard the news and then he prayed and he said, okay, now I'm just going to wait and see what happens from here. No, he continued to pray. That prayer we read in chapter 1 was a summary of the prayer that Nehemiah prayed over and over and over again. For 4 months, he continued to pray the same thing, this burden. And throughout the book of Nehemiah, we see that this was a man of prayer. He prayed often, and many of these prayers were just one-sentence prayers. They were just very, very brief prayers, like the one that we see here in verse 4. And it's a reflection that in every situation, Nehemiah was a man who prayed. Nehemiah was a man who sought God. He's an example of what we see in 1 Thessalonians where it says to pray without ceasing. This is what, who Nehemiah was. He constantly, constantly prayed. And so the king notices that Nehemiah is sat in his presence, a breach of protocol. It was an opportunity that Nehemiah had been waiting for. It was actually what he, when it came, the thing he was waiting for was here at this time. He is terrified. And how does he handle it? It says, so I prayed to the God of heaven. Before he responded, it says he prayed to the God of heaven. Now, he didn't say to Artaxerxes, he said, King, hold on a second. I know you asked a question, but I need to spend some time in prayer. And so I'm going to go over here and I'm going to pray for a little while and then I'm going to respond to you. No, he had been praying continually. He'd been praying all the time. When the time came, he was ready. See, there's times when God may be calling us to do something and we have to be prepared to do that. We have to be prepared. And sometimes we give that answer, you know, should you do this? Well, I need to pray about it. Well, sometimes maybe we should have been praying about it. And continually praying about it. And when the opportunity comes, we no longer have to pray about it because we have done that and we are prepared. And then he prayed through it. He says, I prayed to the God of heaven. As he speaks, he's saying, God, give me the words to say. Lord, help me. Give me wisdom. I know the time is here. I have to act. Let me say the words I need to say. This is an extension of all those prayers that Nehemiah had prayed. And with that prayer, he shares with the king. In verse 5, it says, I said to the king, if it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. Then the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, how long will your journey be, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given me to the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's force, he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress, which is by the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the house to which I will go. And the king granted them to me because the good hand of my God was on me. Then I came to the governors of the provinces beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent me with officers of the army and horsemen. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about it, it was very displeasing to them that someone had come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel. So Nehemiah asked the king here for permission to lead an expedition to repair the walls of Jerusalem. Understand how huge of a request this was. In Ezra, we saw that people had tried to rebuild the walls before, and the king had actually sent people to stop the building of the walls. Generally, kings really weren't all that excited about walled cities of the cities they had conquered. If Jerusalem had walls, logic would say that people would rebel again. And so Nehemiah, in his fear, he was willing to make this huge request of Artaxerxes. Why? Because not only did Nehemiah spend time in prayer, he spent time in preparation. Nehemiah had a plan. When the time came and the question was asked, he was ready to share his plan. He knew exactly what he was going to tell the king when he had the opportunity to tell him. Nehemiah saw the problem, he prayed, and he was willing to be the answer to that prayer. And when he knew that God had something for him to do, he was ready when the time came. So notice his demeanor. Even in knowing what he was supposed to do, he was humble before the king. There was no benefit for the king to send Nehemiah or to have him build these walls. See, too often arrogance can be a problem in the Christian's life. It can be too much of a problem. A little humility goes a long way. You know, we have to work with people. That's part of what we do. And we have to work with people who aren't believers. We have to work with people who don't care about the things that we care about, who don't have the same mission that we have. And we have to be able to gain their support. A lot of times there are people in our lost world that we need their partnerships and we need their support. And too often Christians have built this us against them mentality. And too often this harms the mission that God has for us. Nehemiah not only cared about his Jewish brothers and sisters, and we see how much he cared about them, but he really, truly cared about the king. And so he goes to the king, And he asks, and he has a plan for the king. I would say here that this plan that we see shows how much that he cared. He was the king's servant. And when he was going to leave the king asked how long, and he had to have a plan. How long would your journey be? If he wasn't prepared, how would he answer that? I don't know. I have no idea how long. No, he knew. He quickly gave an answer. He says, look, here's the situation. And he knew how long it would take for him to travel from where he was to Jerusalem. He knew how long it would take to assess the situation, and he had planned how long it would take to build the walls and how long it would take to travel back. He knew these things. Trusting in God is not an excuse for us not to plan. Instead, it's all the more reason that we should be prepared. If we truly trust in God, that we should prepare and spend time in planning. God will give us a chance to take an action, and we have to be ready for that action. And so not only did Nehemiah give a definite time here, but he goes a little further and he gives some request to the king. He says, hey, I need to do this and I'm going to be gone this amount of time. But by the way, can you also send some letters so that I can have some safe travel? Oh, and by the way, king, I need some materials here. Could you send me some letters so that I can get some materials to build these walls? Prayer and planning are not at odds with each other. They go together. See, many Christians, for some reason, think it's unspiritual to plan. That we're just going to wait on God. God will show us what we're supposed to do. We can just kick back and wait, and whatever happens, happens, and God will show us. And that's just not true. Nehemiah cared enough about the people he was working with to have a plan. Nehemiah cared enough about the king to have a plan. He shows us the biblical balance between waiting on God and praying, but also about thinking and planning what we'll do when God opens the door. So Nehemiah, he gets the letters and he goes on his journey. And the king sends the officers of the army with him to keep him safe. And as Nehemiah moves forward with his desire to serve God, he takes the time to gather the right information. So we read in verses 11 through 16, so I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I arose in the night, I and a few men with me. I did not tell anyone what my God was putting into my mind to do for Jerusalem. And there was no animal with me except the animal on which I was riding. So I went out at the night by the valley gate in the direction of the dragon's well and on the refuse gate, inspecting the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were consumed by fire. Then I passed on to the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was no place for my mount to pass. So I went up at night by the ravine and inspected the wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done, nor had I as yet told the Jews, the priests and nobles, the officials, or the rest who did the work. So Nehemiah gets to Jerusalem, and he spends the first few days here observing. He wanted to know exactly what the project in front of him would require. He doesn't make any rash decisions. See, when Nehemiah heard about the situation in Jerusalem, he knew a lot about the situation. He had heard about the situation, but he did not know the problem. He was patient and went and observed to find out exactly what was happening. See, too many times, I've seen people respond to, get upset, react poorly, use bad judgment because they responded to something they thought they knew about and not actually what they knew to be true. They responded to what they thought was true without taking the time to find out what was actually true. Nehemiah spends the time here to find out what was really, really happening. And he began with a realistic appraisal of the situation. It says in one place the rubble was so bad that he couldn't even ride his horse or his mule. He couldn't even get through the debris. As the leader, he had to know exactly what the situation was so that he could develop a realistic, practical plan of action. See, Nehemiah had a plan, but then when he observed and spent time, he realized that there were some changes that needed to be made to his plan. He was willing to adapt his plan to what was going on here. And so we can see this balance that we have in Nehemiah's life. He planned, he moved forward with his plan, and he was willing to see the circumstances and to do what he needed to get the job done. He was realistic when he saw the problem. And as we will see in the coming weeks, he broke this problem, this big plan. He broke it down into manageable parts in order to get the job done. And getting the job done required Nehemiah to use and have the right people in his corner. In verse 17, it says, "Then I said to them, 'You see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem so that we will no longer be a reproach.' And I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. Then they said, 'Let us arise and build.' So they put their hands to do the work. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, 'What is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?' So I answered them and said to them, 'The God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will rise and build. But you have no portion, right or memorial, in Jerusalem.'" You know, it's easy to get idealistic about serving God until you meet the people you actually got to work with. Sometimes we're like the Peanuts character Linus, who says this: "I love mankind, it's people I can't stand." You know, I have said often and joked often that ministry would be really great if it weren't for the people. Now, I say that, but I never really mean that. Ministry involves people, and I do. I love people. But there are many people who struggle in ministry because they don't know how to work with people. There are those that struggle in doing any kind of ministry because there are people around them they have to work with, and they struggle working with others. They don't like them. They don't see things the same way. They have different visions. We have to learn to work with people. In this passage, we see three different kinds of people that Nehemiah has to deal with. And he has to deal with them in a real way. That he had to deal with an unbelieving king. And we talked about that earlier, but this was a real person that Nehemiah had to have a relationship with and he had to work with in order to do what God had called him to do. Second, we see that he had to work with those who were his enemies. Those were in opposition. Sanballat, the governor of Samaria, to the north. Tobiah ruled the Ammonites to the east. Geshem was the leader of the Arabs to the south. And all of these men, they opposed the fortified Jerusalem because it threatened their political positions. Look, they didn't care about the Jews. They cared nothing about the Jewish God. They were angry, and they were going to join forces together to ridicule the project and accuse the people of rebellion against the king. And we're going to see in the coming weeks about this opposition that comes against Nehemiah. But thirdly, Nehemiah had to work with some demoralized Jews. And we're going to see in the coming weeks that some of these Jews were helpful and some were in opposition. The Jews here, they believed in God at least intellectually. They believed in God's covenant at least intellectually, but they had lost hope. And they had tried to rebuild the wall before and had failed, and there were some that were against the project. And he had to handle all of these people correctly in Jerusalem. And so notice when he come into Jerusalem, he didn't tell anybody anything. He didn't tell anybody about God's call. He doesn't tell them about his burden until he gets up in the night with a few trusted friends, inspects the walls, and then he enlists the right people. He shares his vision. He shares his calling. He shares his burden. He shares his belief in God's power to rebuild the wall. And only with the proper preparation does he gain the response that he needed. Let's look again at verse 18 where it says, "I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. Then they said, 'Let us arise and build.' So they put their hands to the good work." So how will this all go? We'll see this in the coming weeks as we continue to study the events. We'll continue to see how this was, but the men, they respond. They said, "Yes, we will do it." And then they actually do it. And I find it very interesting when we serve in different kinds of things. There are a lot of people who will say, "Yes, let's do that." There are fewer people that will say, let's go do that." There are a lot of people who will say, "Let's go do it." There are a few people who will go do it. Right? There are a lot of people who think something is a good idea. There are fewer people that say, "Let me be part of that and let me go do that." See, Nehemiah had to share his vision. He had to get people excited about the vision, and some people had to go with him. And so we see Nehemiah doing this as he takes people with him and he trusts God through the whole thing. But Nehemiah gives a picture of his heart in verses 19 and 20 where it says, "But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, 'What is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?' And listen to verse 20. I answered them and said to them, 'The God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will rise and build, but you have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem.'" See, if we wait on God, if we plan accordingly, if we really take time to observe the situation, if we love people and enlist the right people, Nehemiah believed that he would have success. Now, it was going to be hard, and opposition would come. And it may not necessarily be the success that we think we're going to have, but it'd be successful in the eyes of God. Nehemiah is a great study on leadership. And I know that some in this room, you may think, well, you know, I'm not really a leader. You don't see yourself as a leader. I strongly disagree. I believe with all my heart that every person is a leader. We all have influence in some way. And I believe that God has a purpose for each one of our lives. And every person here that God has a plan for. And so let me issue this challenge here this morning. Take time to pray. Take time to sincerely seek what God has for you. Pray that God will show you the plans he has. We all care about something. We all have something that we see that needs to be done. We all have a vision for something. Spend time in prayer over that. And as you pray, begin to envision how God may use you as an answer to that prayer. And as we spend time in that prayer, and as we begin to envision how God may use us, spend time planning. God, if you do use me, God, this is what I will do. And begin to plan so that when God opens the door, and I promise you that if you pray and you seek God, God will open a door. And I have people tell me when it comes to sharing their faith that I never have an opportunity. I promise you, if you pray for an opportunity to share your faith, you're going to have an opportunity. I promise you that if you pray to God to use you, God's going to give you the opportunity. But are you ready when he opens the door? I challenge you as you pray and as you plan, be prepared that God open the door. Do this with humility. Open our eyes to what's really happening all around us and be willing. Be willing to go and do whatever God has asked you to do. Be willing to work with people that you like and people maybe that you struggle with, people that are alongside you and people in opposition. Be willing to work with people. Identify the most dangerous enemies, not just the ones that we can see, but enlist the people that have the same passion that we do. Build around us the people who love us, who love God and desire to serve him.